Welcome to Decades on Dirt Roads, Life Lived and Worked Outside. I'm Catherine.
And I'm Maddie. We got a chance to interview Olin Fulfer. He's a teacher out in Joseph. And got to have a really cool conversation talking about a lot of different things that he's headed up as a teacher and as a really passionate firefighter and outdoor enthusiast. But really more than anything, being a mentor to the youth and leading with kindness as his MO. And definitely one of those people where Catherine and I, you know, we left the interview and you just take a deep breath and you're like, wow, that guy really does it all.
Yeah. I don't know how he has time for anything else. He's, right. You'll see. I mean, he is passionate. He's driven. He has really come out of the hard life that he was born into. And just a little bit of a, I don't know if it'd be a trigger warning, but I feel like that's a popular thing to say.
Yeah.
He does talk about his childhood. It was really rough. So if you don't want to hear about that, this might not be the right episode. But he really has become the person that he needed when he was growing up. And so even though there are some rough topics, he really does, like, inspire you.
Yeah, to really look at what's in your life and, you know, what's worth giving time and energy for. And I really like the phrase that he used, you know, when it comes to the purpose of his life as a teacher, as a husband, as a family man, and all those things. You know, his purpose is people. And I think that that's one person that phrase holds true. So definitely someone to look up to, as a community person, as a teacher, as an educator, as a coach, and just a quality human being. He's one of a kind. So we were very fortunate to sit down with him and hear his story and, get to listen about all the kids that he's impacted. So enjoy.
All right. So why don't you introduce yourself and we'll get started.
I was actually going to lean into
it. You're fine.
It picks up pretty good.
I've never done this, and also I hate the sound of my own voice. Like, so I don't know if I'll ever listen to this, honestly.
You just have your wife listen teaching, and tell us.
And that's what she told me, too. She goes, she said, she's literally already fallen, and she's like, I'm going to listen to this every single day. And I'm like, do you know how much pressure that is? Like, I've been nervous all day. Actually, I've been nervous since the minute that you called. I've been like, oh, my goodness. Because, like, once it's like, I can talk about things, but then once it's actually recording. So I'm wasting time right now, too. So,
no, you're not. No,
but,
you're not.
Yeah, my name's Olin Fulfer. So.
Perfect. Yeah. And we're here at the Joseph High School. Thank you for letting us be here. Can you talk about what you do here?
Yeah, so I teach history. My master's is actually in history. And then I teach fire science and then a mental health class that is probably my favorite. It's up there with the fire science. And then I do a little bit of PE.
Cool.
So kind of everything that they need. And so it's probably going to completely change next year. And my office changes every single year too, and I don't really have a classroom, but I'm always the one that if they need something taught, I'm like, I'll teach that just for the challenge of it.
Yeah.
Go-to guy.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So how did you end up in Joseph? Like, did you grow up around here? Or?
So I grew up in California, kind of bounced around a lot, homeless for a long time, and then ended up coming up and living with my grandma in La Grande. And then I ended up going out and finishing school in Embler. And so graduated Embler, or from Embler, and barely graduated. Ended up taking a couple years off of school. College was like never actually talked about. And so kind of, I didn't understand it then, but now like teaching mental health and kind of dedicated my life to that. Like that's why I'm teaching, is for how much I struggled to get through school and not understanding what, gets kind of a little sad. Is that all right?
Yeah. Like,
okay.
Yeah.
So my mom was killed by my stepdad, domestic violence, when I was 12. Oh. My dad he got in a motorcycle accident, almost died. He was in the hospital for a long, long, long time in a wheelchair, and then ended up struggling with drugs. And then same thing with my mom and pretty much everybody in my family. And so not understanding it then, but like everything was a struggle. Like, not knowing if we're going to have food, shoes, like anything like that. Mm-hmm. Trying to figure out like just the amount of turmoil and trauma that was going on at my house, and then going to school and then not being able to really focus on school or any of that stuff. Basically, I just wanted to get good enough grades to play sports. I love sports, like that helped me a ton. And then I worked like nonstop. I was doing farming, painting, construction, pretty much everything I can do. I even clean businesses at night. And so I was like really tired. I didn't sleep, still struggle with sleeping, but I barely made it through high school. My GPA was just awful. And so like college was not like a thing. Mm-hmm. And so after I graduated, I ended up commercial fishing in Alaska and out of Dutch Harbor in the Bering Sea and kind of being kind of just destroyed by that, but like making good money and like kind of like figuring out like what I wanted to do. So I was out there for a long time with no service, anything like that. And then I came back and I had family members that I thought like super smart, all of that kind of stuff. Like, oh, they're gonna do big things. Come back, they ended up dropping out of school. And I remember being so frustrated, like so mad, like of like at the school system, of like the teachers there, the admin, of like nobody pushing them through and doing everything that they could to like get them to graduate. And so like I basically got into EOU. I was on academic probation for the first 2 years because my GPA was so bad. But I learned that being able to have like a steady home life, like actually being able to have a computer, internet, electricity sometimes, just any of those kinds of like, and food, just basic needs met. I ended up graduating with a 3.8 for my bachelor's and then almost a 4.0 for my master's, and like really studying psychology and like the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, of like if basic necessities are not met for students, you can't teach them anything. They're not going to be able to learn. And so I got into teaching to be that adult that I needed and that my family members needed, my siblings. I have 3 sisters, 2 brothers, and a ton of cousins that I was like really close with. Mm-hmm. A lot of them got into drugs and alcohol hard. And so like I made that choice of like, I'm not gonna drink, I'm not gonna do any of these drugs, like any of that kind of stuff, because if you mix trauma and any of that kind of damage with the coping mechanisms of drug and alcohol, it is going to absolutely annihilate you. And so I substituted that with basically the hardest jobs I can find, and I got addicted to it. And so what was the question again? It was, how did I become a teacher? Yeah, so, and then I got into firefighting. That actually saved my life, honestly. Like, and I'll get into that later, but I'm absolutely in love with firefighting. I think it's like the best thing ever, especially for kids that grew up like me. I think that is like a life-saving thing. If you come from poverty, if you come from trauma, any of that kind of stuff, of like, and you want to work hard, show up on time, and have a good attitude, like you can have an amazing career and something that like that you can do and absolutely love. And so, one huge reason why the fire science program got started here. But I will back up again because I'm nervous. I'm so sorry. Like,
no, don't apologize.
My thoughts are going everywhere. But no, so. Actually applied for a job in Condon that was just history, mm-hmm. and I wanted that job. There was no history teaching jobs locally, mm-hmm. and my wife had absolutely no, she did not want to go to Condon. So I ended up, she went with me, and I interviewed, and it went really, really well. And they offered me the job that same day, and I was like, yeah, I want this job. Like they made it like perfect for me. Mm-hmm. The entire drive back from Condon, my wife bawled her eyes out. Okay, oh. Bawled her eyes out. She's like, she did not want to be that far away from her family. She wanted to stay somewhere close. And so she ended up applying me for an English teaching job here. And I didn't apply for it. I get this email that said, you can pick a time, like we picked you for an interview. And I go, so I call up my wife and I said, no, like, absolutely not. Like, I will tell you, and I told our English teacher so many times that I would never teach English. Not for anything. I can teach anything else. I could not imagine a worse job. And I've told our English teacher, and I'll tell any English teacher this, no, absolutely not. And so she begged me, like, and she was begging, she was crying, and like, please just interview. And so I was like, all right, I'll interview. And so it was the following week. So we drive up here, and again, she's bawling the entire time. Okay, she is bawling. In fact, on the way up to Joseph, I ended up getting a call from Conan that said, hey, we're gonna pass you to our board. And I said, hey, just heads up, like I'm interviewing for a job in Joseph. If I get that, I'm gonna take that, right? knowing that I'm going to bomb the interview. Like, I knew what I was going to do. I was like, I had a plan. There's no way I'm going to get this job.
I'm not teaching English.
I'm not going to teach English. And she's just on the phone, like just in the background, just still crying. So the entire way. And she was tired. So we get here, park down in that parking lot at the very end. I give her this view of the mountains, right? And so I walk up here and then wait for it. And I'm not nervous at all. Okay, I'm not, because I know I don't want this job, and I'm gonna. So I sit down, and basically, like, I'm like, "All right, what's up?" And I tell, and I, all right, I'm like, "To be clear, I don't want to teach English. My wife is bawling in the parking lot. I have no interest in this job." And they said, "Okay, well, perfect. Cool. Like, let's just ask some questions, though."
Yeah.
And so they asked some questions, and I joked the entire time, like every single thing they asked, like I just. Joked. They asked, like, what can you give us your three favorite parts of being a teacher? Like, what means the most to you? And I go, June, July, and August. And yeah, just, and they're, but it did not go over well because they're just laughing and like the whole thing. And like, then we start actually talking about real things. And I'm like, all right, this is fun, but don't offer me this job. Yeah. Don't call, nothing. Like, I will not accept an English teaching job. And that was the only job. So I leave and I'm all happy. I'm like, yay.
Yeah,
like,
bombed it.
Conman, here we come. Yeah. Like, we even looked at houses. We even ate a burger from the little restaurant they have there. And I'm like, I'm going to be comfortable there. This is going to be awesome. And then that same night, Joseph calls. And I thought they were offering me, because there's also a head boys basketball coach. And I was just resigned this last year because of health reasons. And the same reason why I'm not going to be firefighting this full time this next summer. Mm-hmm. But I thought they were just going to be offering me a boys basketball job. And mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, that's super nice. But they literally spent a while after that meeting and they created a position for me that was teaching history, PE, and like all this random stuff, like try to make it good enough to where I would accept it. And I put it on a speakerphone. That was a mistake. But it actually ended up being great because like they made it like too good to be true. But I put it on speakerphone because I was like, all right, they're going to tell me, like, no job, and then I'll accept the Conan one.
Yeah.
And then they made it, like, a perfect position, and my wife's just in the background, like,
look what I did for us.
Yeah.
And, she manifested that.
Yeah, she did. She,
absolutely. And so, yeah, short story long.
Yeah, there it is.
That's how I ended up here.
Wow.
So, teaching in Joseph.
Is she from LaGrange?
She's from Embler. Okay. Yeah,
this
no.
This is
so
way more familiar.
It is, yeah, and they come up a lot, like, awesome. So... She she's always loved Joseph, and
how could you not?
I know, yeah. So like they always went to Willow Lake for vacation, and so to get this job was kind of a dream for her. So
yeah, I was gonna say, it seems like it turned out okay for you.
Ended up being
the
great.
The view
so
is way better than Condon.
The view is awesome. Yes.
Condon's an isolated place.
It is, yes.
What is the population of Condon again? Isn't it like less than?
It's super small.
It's not big.
Because isn't Hunter's from Condon?
Yeah.
It's really small.
Yeah.
Yeah. I ended up getting in the newspaper, and I'm trying to remember his name, but he worked in fuels in Ukiah, and his parents ran the newspaper in Condon. And he ended up cutting out a clipping that said that Condon was excited about hiring their new teacher, because they took it to the board, even though I told them, hey, no, don't do that yet. Yeah. But they're like, oh, just in case.
Yeah.
So they're like, we're really excited about hiring our new teacher. And so he ended up taking a clipping out, and he cut it out and sent it to me with no note, nothing, just that article. And I was like, I wonder if he's mad.
I wonder if there's going to be any backlash.
Yeah.
Oh, so, that's awesome. Okay, yeah. So that's how you got here. You're obviously super passionate about teaching. So speak to how you came about that fire science curriculum.
Yes.
And how that kind of came about.
So it took a few years before we got that going, but I was Forest Service, right? And we had a teacher here who was ODF at the time, and he was like, and so I actually applied for both, because I was like, it's just so much money, and if I have June, July, and August, like, that's perfect. And so didn't want to miss a season, so I applied for both, and whichever one gives you the job offer, take that. Because I've had students from my fire science class just pick one agency that they're like, really want it, and then not get it. And right. So I tell them, get both, and now we're like 100%. Mm-hmm. And now both agencies are kind of fighting over our kids, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. Luckily, they've been doing amazing. Like, yeah. I have some incredible kids that are doing hot shots now. They're permanents. I could not be prouder of these kids. what they're doing now. But so it took a little bit. So I ended up getting on with ODF, and which worked out perfect because they at that time they paid into PERS. Mm-hmm. So I was basically double dipping June, July, and August. Mm-hmm. And then they would let me work weekends. Like, they have a lot less stipulations in Forest Service. Like, when Forest Service, you're like, you're done.
Right.
When people are hunting, I still was able to work Friday, Saturday, Sundays through October. And that was awesome. Even mini dispatches when we'd have fires around here, mm-hmm. I would just take over fire as an IC, or just be a Sawyer on a fire or something. So ODF worked out really, really, really well for us. And so the fire science program just kind of started as an idea to help the kids, the students that weren't able to get on, like their first time, learn it, get all of their certifications, and use the local agencies. Like, I have really good friends that are Forest Service. We have actually a lot of parents who have kids that go to Joseph that are Forest Service employees. Mm-hmm. The FMO, Nathan, he's not there anymore, but a lot of like close ties, and they have helped me do so much with the class. Like, super lucky that ODF and Forest Service kind of all in. Even if they don't get any of the employees that year, they're sending their people to do as much trainings as possible because it's good for them.
Totally.
And it's massive for our kids to not just have to hear from me. And so we teach every single thing that fire school would teach, plus we add S211, S212, using C-fallers from both agencies. Mm-hmm. And then we do as much as we can outside. So a normal fire science for a high school class is usually a semester every year, which is half a year, or it's a full year every other year. We're doing this class a full year every single year, and I have kids that start as sophomores and take it sophomore, junior, senior. And so for those kids that have done all the basics, I get them out as much as possible with logging agencies, contracts. We're now working with our local fire department. I have 5 students in my class this year that are volunteer firefighters just in Joseph. And so we're doing a ton more. We're actually going to be working with the ODF in a couple weeks to plant trees. And so we're branching out a lot more, and we have been, but trying to do a lot more than just the basic firefighting. Mm-hmm. I have a bunch of juniors that are going to be doing trails and rec as well at the Forest Service. And so it's been really, really cool. It's like a pipeline that helps out a lot of people as well. And so because of how the class is, and it's all year, we do all of the classroom stuff pretty quickly in the fall. Not quickly, but like we hit it really hard.
Yeah.
And then we intermix the S211, S212, and anything else. We do like math
and just compasses. For some people who aren't.
Oh, so sorry. Yeah.
Why don't you say what those classes are? 211, 212.
So 211 is pumps.
class.
And then S212 is chainsaw.
There you go.
And sorry about that.
Not everyone is in.
No, I'm so sorry. Yeah. So, and then after that, we just add our own kind of trainings that either there's somebody from the Forest Service is like, hey, would your class be interested in that? And I've never said no.
Yeah.
Like whatever they want to come in and teach or show us, we're all in for. And so we get out with both agencies quite a bit to either like with Forest Service because they have a lot more. Red tape for like burning and stuff.
Yeah.
We've been able to go out and watch them burn.
Cool.
With ODF, they'll get us fully equipped with yellows, hard hats, all the PPE, and then we're running the drip torches.
That's awesome. And it's get them to catch the fire bug early.
Yes, absolutely. What I found is anytime we do any sort of job, like we do a lot, like so I have Sawyers now that doing amazing. Like they're 18, they're running the chainsaws, and they've been trained up for a couple seasons now. Yeah. And anytime we go out and we do thinning or just limbing and bucking is usually, they'll be like, we got some downed trees, can you guys do that? And I always ask them, can we burn them? And I found that the kids are 1,000 times more motivated to do any bit of work for anybody if they have kind of that carrot to burn. And so just our past few weeks and then even next week is going to be all limbing, bucking, and then we're going to be burning. Like it's,
nice.
Yeah, it's
so
a ton
cool.
of fun. And so they're getting a lot of saw time, and then the kids that aren't able to run saw, they're swampers. They're all professional swampers now. So,
that's so cool.
Yeah.
Carrying cards.
As much like they and every single one of them, like they all want to be on that saw.
Yeah.
Like, and so what's really cool about that is, and you guys would know, like, wait, have you? I'll just ask. Have you worked for the Forest Service? Okay.
Yeah.
So you guys would know, like, if you hire some kids straight out of high school that have not had another job, that, like, especially, like, not the farm and ranch kids. A lot of the kids around here are. But I remember being with the Forest Service in Ukiah, and then even with ODF, we'd get rookies on that have never held a job. And so, like, they're extremely afraid of running the chainsaw. All trying to get them to work their days off as near impossible. Things that, like, to us, after doing it a while, like, well, especially for me, like, I went from commercial fishing where it was 18-hour days for 60-something days straight of hard work. Like, people hate to hear that, like, but I will tell you it's absolutely true. The easiest day I ever had commercial fishing, long lining in the Bering Sea, the easiest day is still way harder than the hardest day I've ever had firefighting. And I tell my students this all the time, like I love firefighting so much that, like, most of that job is stuff that, like, so many people would pay. Like, if they knew what we were doing, they would pay to do that. We're getting paid to travel to all these really cool states. Like, I had a season a couple years ago where I went to Canada, and I went up on a hand crew up to Alaska, and it was so awesome. And, like, but I had people on those crews who were just new, like, whining and crying and like, oh, like, it's so long. And I remember on commercial fishing, like, everybody's working long hours. You were banned from whining. You could not, like, because it's infectious. It's a cancer. And so I tell my students all the time, like, I take them on hikes. We do long, like, line digs. Mm-hmm. We do all that kind of stuff. And my class actually starts out large and it always ends smaller because we just weed those kids out. I was like, I'm sorry. Like, this class is to prepare you to work. Like, this class is so if you're not able to do it, like, in fact, you should see a group chat that you want to read it. Like, I'll let you read what I had to send out to my kids. Like, because
let's hear it.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to let you because I'll be really, really nice until you get really lazy or, like, you have a bad attitude or you're late.
Right.
Like, same thing with firefighting. Like, I'm like, so I got a zero tolerance for that. Whining and all that kind of stuff gets infectious. We're all miserable. We're all working long hours.
Right.
Like, and so I tell my students this, like, all the time. Like, if you do not be late, like, if I put my name on this and I help you get a job with Forest Service, ODF, like, first of all, show up on time, be early.
Yeah.
Another thing is have a good attitude. Like, it sucks for everybody.
Yeah,
like,
there's misery in company, and that is the best part, because you're all fucking miserable. But you're like, you know what? We're joking about it because we're all in this together.
Yes, exactly. And so, like, I found that the people that just want to just whine and cry and talk smack about the crew boss and, like, all this other stuff, it's like, yikes. Like, that just makes it so much worse. And so what I always did, like, on any hand crew, like, I just fake it and just – but, like, find – there. But there are so many things that are just amazing, and you're getting paid for it.
Find the good,
we're,
man.
We're
find
outside the good. Working, and the weather is beautiful,
yeah.
And we get to look at fire. I love fire. Like, I love looking at fire. So I tell my kids all the time, like, if you don't love these things, then probably not. Like, we'll find you another class. Like, there's some really cool classes that we have.
Yeah, you can go to the English class.
Absolutely. And so – all right, this is Wednesday, March 6th, and I'm just going to let you read this and then read what one of my students said.
Okay.
So it's probably typos. Like, I wrote it in the morning, and I was just, like, kind of annoyed at the class that happened on Monday or whatever it was. So.
Okay, for fire science today, we're going to go to Tyler Kristen's house on Eggsland and go and limb and buck the trees we fell in the fall and burn them. I need everyone who comes with us to actually work and not just stand around watching a few kids work. I'm going to start removing the students who just come and watch and putting them in other classes. If we have 20 students in the class and only a few actually do things during our jobs, then I am teaching you all wrong and failing the class. I would rather weed it down to 8 to 10 students who actually want to work hard during the class than set a bad example by allowing most of the class to do nothing while a few solid students do most of the work. It defeats the entire point of the class. I'm going to have Tim help me find the students that need to be in other classes as well. One of the students says, thank God.
Yeah.
So, oh my God, that's incredible.
The one student.
It's like, come on, it's the class is every other day for an hour and 45 minutes, right?
Yeah.
And it takes us 20 minutes a lot of times to get out to the places. Mm-hmm. And I get it. Like, you can be lazy and all that kind of stuff. And I'll give some leeway for that. But, like, you can work steady or at least fake work. Like, just standing there and just having kind of a bad attitude. Like,
Probably I'm not
going to teach that. Mm-hmm. Because when you get out and you're – and that's the rookie and, like, that's what you learn and that's what you get used to doing – oh, those are the worst employees, and I don't want to work with them. It's awful.
It's not
and
fun.
So I become a jerk. Like, I will absolutely, I was like, I'm not going to sign off on that. And so that was a deal that I made with admin. Normally, when a semester starts, after 2 weeks, you can't drop the class.
Mm-hmm.
And with high schoolers, after a quarter, you can't drop the class. But I'm like, if I'm going to teach this and do it right, they're going to be removed anytime, and I'll give them a grade. They're going to be in another person's class, in a classroom thing. They cannot stay in this class if they're going to be unsafe, horrible attitude, or they're just coming up with a ton of excuses. Cause when we're, there's going to be some PowerPoints. There's going to be all that kind of stuff. And so I try to teach in an interesting way. I'll try to bring in other people. If you're just sitting in there and you're falling asleep, you're not taking the notes, or you're just bombing it, or just having a bad attitude, like, oh, I just want to be out, I'm going to remove you. Like, because that becomes cancerous. And then most of the time, so we do actually like a ton of community service work.
Mm-hmm.
We do as much as we can for as many people as possible. Anytime we hear of anybody that needs their yard cleaned, we do a ton of snow shoveling. We rake leaves all fall. Anytime we do that, because I can send 20 kids who work, like, mm-hmm. I and I'll get on them. And Tim is our maintenance leader, and he'll also drive our bus. And so he's an old logger, and he works hard. He's also a wrestling coach, it works out. Like, he's been helping me, like, keep on it. He's been helping me teach the saw if I don't get like any of the Forest Service ODF there. And so he's been a huge help. We get out as much as we can, and we can do a ton of work in a small amount of time. And like, if it's usually elderly people who can't afford to hire anybody.
Right.
And then even if they can, like, we're not going to charge them. And it's become widespread that if you need work, they call the school or they'll get my number.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like one of the biggest things, like, that I've been most proud of with the class is the kids. Like, they know, like, they're never lazy when it comes to like the community service part.
Mm-hmm.
They can get that way. Some can get that way when it's like monotony, and like, we have a log deck that we'll cut firewood on. Like, if we have absolutely nothing, I didn't get a community service project, we don't have a burn, and I ran out of like stuff in the classroom and I didn't get Forest Service ODF, mm-hmm. then we go down and we work on a log deck and we'll cut firewood. That's usually when the kids will kind of get like, they'll hit a little bit of a wall,
right.
But I'm trying to teach them, even when you're tired, even when you're kind of in a bad mood, you can still work, and you can still, it doesn't have to be like, like just splitting the wood and cutting and do all that stuff and like working as hard as you possibly can, but you can be steady, mm-hmm. right?
You can still
and
see something through.
Absolutely. And so if you can get used to that, like fire science, I work. And that's like kind of what I'm trying to get the kids into. And so the kids that last and finish it and get signed off with their certificates on that are usually going to be pretty solid.
And, yeah. I mean, Joseph, we're surrounded by so many cool recreation opportunities. Catherine and I were discussing this on the way over of, you know, how can we kind of tie this into you being in rural Oregon and all that kind of stuff? Because there's two extremes of people that grow up in these types of places. You either come to appreciate places like this,
yep.
or you come to really despise it.
Yeah.
Because you never got to enjoy it, or you never were in a space where you had someone like you foster how to go seek out trails,
yep.
how to go seek out different land ownerships and know where you can go hiking or know where you can go recreate.
Yep.
So that's super cool to be that point person in your community.
Trying to be, but I know that there's so much that I don't know, that I try to bring in as many experts in their fields as possible. Mm-hmm. Just because, like, especially like falling, like, I love running a chainsaw. When it comes to like actually being like a sea fall or anything like that, there's so much that I can do fire line forever. But when it comes to like every single thing that you need to be an expert on for like running the saw class or anything like that, I know that I'm not there, because you have to run the saw a lot. Like, you have to be around it. And so I bring in like really like people that I trust that are just that are always around that constantly.
Yeah, there's an art to it.
Yeah, absolutely, because
the
same thing with practicing like basketball or boxing. I teach boxing, and I always tell the kids, like, for boxing, if you lower your guard or anything like that, I'm like, just so I'll just ask you guys, just practice make perfect.
Mm-mm.
Ah, good. Ah, most people.
You're talking to two former athletes.
Yeah. Fine. Yes. All right. Thank you. Yeah. And same thing with the chainsaw. Like, so practice does not make perfect. Piss poor practice can destroy you, right? If you're practicing bad form, if you're practicing poor habits, you're actually making yourself worse. And then it's even worse if you pass that on anybody else. And so perfect practice makes perfect. Mm-hmm. And so you, like, I have to make sure whatever we're teaching is dialed and is correct. And so anything that I'm not like really, really like feel extremely comfortable on, I am very blessed here. Like you were saying, like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be just fire. Like, we bring in people from everywhere. We have so many natural resources people that will come in. We're bringing in Sarah to teach us how to, and she's an expert at.
Oh, I love Sarah.
She's so good. Like, she's awesome. Like, she's and so great. She's coming in. Jamie, they're coming up, and they're going to be doing this massive unit on soils and trees and, like, what, like, why we thin and why, and then how to replant and how to make sure that these trees grow. I can dig a hole and I could put a tree in a ground, but I will not, like, and I've got a lot of questions from people too about that. Like, hey, are you able to do that? I'm like, I mean, I have a class and like, I can dig, but I'm more of a grunt, like when it comes to a lot of things. And so, definitely like what you were saying, like this area, we are so lucky with the experts that we do have, for anything outdoors and really, I'm trying to find for my students something that, like, maybe fire's not for them,
right?
And so maybe wildland, maybe they love the structure aspect of it. So we're getting them into that. I have kids that are, like, more interested in the timber and the trails, okay? Fish and wildlife as well. We've been working with them. Like, there's so much natural resources that I'm almost wanting to change the class.
I was like, you're covering so much. It's like almost like basic forestry,
you know, it's
kind of thing.
I kind of messed that up, actually. You know what my class is actually called now?
What?
And I always forget about this. Like, this is what it's listed on for my
environmental science.
It's getting closer.
Yeah. It is, yeah. So it
should just be called anything outdoors.
Right, yeah. And that's exactly what it is, too. So, but yeah, one of the main things is just teaching them how to work, and being able to work as a group, and like the main things, like when I, you know, when I was running an engine or the hand crew or any of that kind of stuff, of like what I wanted my employees to do is what I have my students do. And so we kind of, and another, every single time I bring in somebody that my students are like, oh, that guy or a girl, like anybody, like they're just the most amazing person. I always try to get them to reinforce the same things. Mm-hmm. And luckily, usually if you made it that far and you're that good of an employee, it's the same thing of like I want you to have a good attitude. I want you to be on time. I want you to work hard. I tell my kids, like, if anybody, one huge pet peeve of mine, and I know probably you're the same thing, is like somebody asked for a volunteer to go get a bladder bag. That needs to be one of my students. They need to be fighting over going to get that bladder bag. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like go do those jobs that nobody wants to do. Be that person, like, because that's going to make you look good. That's going to also, like, it's going to become habit. And just getting used to, like, I like grabbing the bladder bag. I actually had my first fire with ODF. I feel so bad. So we got on this fire that ended up being called Scarface, and I'll see if I can, I'll pull it up on my Instagram and I'll show you what ended up happening. But it's two different injuries. Looks like the same, but I ended up breaking my nose and then splitting open my eyebrow two different ways. And so you know how, like, Forest Service, in Ukiah, I never once got called in the middle of the night to go fight a fire, right? So it's a difference. Like, Forest Service will let it burn overnight, mm-hmm. and then they'll come and get it in the morning, right? Mm-hmm. ODF, no. I had no idea until I got a call at 2 o'clock in the morning to go and respond to a fire up on this hill. And so I ended up getting to the engine, and so let's see. This is my first ODF fire. Split open my nose.
What happened?
Yeah, what's going on,
all right, so speaking about bladder bags.
Yeah.
Right? And so we all, like, we had a bunch of bladder bags and we filled them up and we see this fire and it's like kind of a nice little hike into it. And we're like looking at it like, I don't want to come back to the engine. Like, let's get everything we can just to like dig line around this and put it out over there. It's too far to get water into. So we're like, all right, all bladder bags. So we each had bladder bags, and I can't remember. I know some of it. I ended up, so I had a Plasky, the Domar, and a chainsaw, and a bladder bag, right? And I think Blue grabbed two bladder bags, and I think Jess had two bladder bags. So we're hiking in, and it's a nice little slope, and it's in the middle of the night, and I fall a lot anyways, even if it's like...
I can relate to that.
I'm always falling. Yeah. And if it's... And Kip could tell you, too. I've been on fires with him and just falling. And this is not flat, and I can't see. And I have a chainsaw, bladder bag, and all this stuff. And it's my first fire with ODF. And, like, I'm like, all right, I'm a firefighter veteran. I'm FFT1. I'm from the Forest Service. I can do this. All right, so I'm hiking in, and all of a sudden, my chainsaw starts to slip. So it goes here, it falls off. And so what do I do to fix it? I put it back on here this way. My Domar falls off. Plasky goes down. So the Domar goes down. I try to bend down to get it. Plasky comes up and smacks me, breaks my nose, right? And so almost knocks me out cold. I'm spitting blood. And I'm like, oh, man. And they're like, are you okay? I'm like, I'll be fine. And so, like, right. I don't want to go back. Right. I'm already there. And, you know, I want to prove myself. Like,
Sure. Broken nose.
It's probably not broken.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Yeah, it'll be all right. So yeah. I get back on there. They help me up there. I'm still bleeding. Like, get onto the fire. Dig line. Okay, spray some water. So Blue's at the top, and I'm at the bottom of this fire. Blue sets down his bladder bag, full bladder bag at the top, right? And then all of a sudden, I'm sitting down trying to fix my old nose. And he goes, heads up! So I turn around, and all of a sudden this bladder bag coming down the
roller.
Mountain. Yeah, and I turn around, and just the brass smacks me, the baton just boom, cracks me here, and I still have the scar there, and just annihilates me, right? And so I'm on the ground.
Yeah, you're down.
I could not believe that, and like trying to explain that to anybody, like at the ODF, was insane. Like,
I need two forms to pull out.
So they call them, hey, we're gonna need a name for your fire, and we're gonna call this Scarface.
So fitting.
That was my first fitting. One. So get back, and they're gonna take me to the hospital. But then and I'm like, no. Like, so we ended up so there we had Chestnut 1 and Chestnut 2 fire blown up. And they're like, we need more people. If you, we're gonna send a runner to take you to the hospital, get you all fixed up. I'm like, where's everybody else going? They're going out to that new start. I'm like, I want to go to that.
A little bit of FOMO.
Yeah. So it was absolutely like I still have FOMO so bad.
Oh my God.
So they ended up just putting this together and gluing it, and then putting this together and gluing it, and being like, is that good? And I'm like, feels all right.
You're perfect.
Yep. Absolutely. So got on. I ended up like 5 fires that day and. Really cool, but
yeah. How mad was your wife when you got home?
So mad. Yeah, no, she was like,
fitting.
Well, yeah. No. Oof. Yeah. I've done some stupid things, but yeah.
You're here to tell the story, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Man, that's
thank
awesome.
God for super glue.
Yeah, thank God.
Super glue has been great. So, yeah.
I'm sure. But I'm just having a hard time understanding like how this curriculum comes about.
Yeah.
Because as a teacher, you, like, decide what your curriculum is, and then you just came up with, like, this idea of, I guess I'm just going to figure out it out as I go?
Yeah.
Like, how did that work?
So, we had our ag teacher at the time, Toby, and so it ended up starting as a CTE grant. Mm-hmm. So, like, we have an aviation program now, so we're doing a lot more. There's, like, this big push, and we're at the forefront right now of, college is great. But we're trying to find things, like we have a welding program, we're trying to find things here that kids can do, like if they don't want to get a college degree, like they can just hit the ground running. And that was like a part of it. They wanted to use my certifications and my knowledge to teach this class. And like as soon as, I mean, all they did was like barely even mention it. And I was like, is that a possibility? Like I've never thought that would be. And so, yeah, we ended up just pulling, like, I grabbed every resource I could from ODF and Forest Service. It started out doing way more in classroom stuff of just trying to figure it out. It's changed a lot since the first year that we've done it. It's changed a ton. And so it was, like, more death by PowerPoint. Like, I did it exactly how a fire school would do it. Like, we learned.
Ooh,
we
that's
did,
rough.
It was so rough. So, like, we would do every PowerPoint first, like that was it. They pass the test. All right, now we're going to start doing the field day. Mm-hmm. And so now I change it to where what we'll do is we'll do something out in the field. We'll do it outside. We'll learn it. And then we go in the classroom. Then I start teaching it. And like the kids have done it so much already. And so like I'll do like one PowerPoint, one lesson. And I'll make sure to hit it in kind of a way like hands-on of like, this is what they're doing. Like we'll do hose, we'll do like any of those kind of things that whatever we're learning at the time, classroom, and then we'll do it out in the field again. And so, cause we have that much time. And then I'll find out from somebody of like, oh, we should do this. I'm like, yes. Like, and so it's changed, like every year is different. Like every year there's something different. Sometimes we have these amazing opportunities to do full day burns, or like even a full week to where every mm-hmm. day we're just burning and burning and burning. Some years we can't. And so luckily like this year has been just incredible for burning. But last year was kind of not so much. Mm-hmm. And so every year is kind of different, mm-hmm. but yeah, just the curriculum, was just all stolen from just what would ODF and Forest Service, what would they want to have their kids learn? That's and awesome. Yeah, and just working with them and their permanents usually coming up, and especially when they're bored, it's nice because yeah. they're getting a hold of me instead of me bugging them all the time.
That's so cool. That's yeah. awesome because it's kind of a make it your own and learn it on the go with
yep.
what else can you involve, and the more connections and networking opportunities you have, the more options you have to bring people in for those specialty things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And it depends on the class too. And so like if I have a class that like is absolutely just more excited about classroom stuff, which I've had only 1 year, which is really strange. But yeah, they love the classroom stuff. But most of my classes, just if I tell them, if they ask like, what are we doing today? I'm like, oh, we're in the classroom. Like, it is, it's like pulling nails. Like, I mean, it's the same as firefighting. Like, you don't like to hear that.
Yeah.
Like, no, how many days is this training? Like,
yeah.
And how many hours?
Yeah.
And yeah, it's, luckily it's not full days. It's like an hour and 45 and you do a break. But even then, like they don't like to sit there that whole time.
Yeah, they
want to
get outside.
They do, yeah. Because most of the kids that do the class are the ones that are like the more hands-on, the more outdoorsies. They're not the ones that are like are thriving. And not to say that some of my kids don't thrive in the classroom, mm-hmm. But there's some. Like if you judge a fish by how well it can climb a tree, like it's going to be a pretty dumb fish, right?
Yeah.
And so it's the same thing with the classes. Like find what they're good at, and then and for every class, like find what they love. And what we can get them to like be passionate about,
yeah.
And then try to teach to that, yeah. And so it's changed it's changed quite a bit. So this year I have a lot more. We brought in a lot more structure fire type stuff. I have a kid who straight out of high school is going to be getting a permanent with structure fire down in Nevada, and so because of that, and because I have five kids that were like all in for structure fire, we've been doing way more structure fire stuff. Like took them down. To our fire department here, fire station, and did a full training there, and then bringing up their firefighters and doing training there. We did a burn with them, doing as much as we can to introduce them to the structure fire aspect of environmental science.
That's awesome.
So,
do you do stuff with search and rescue?
So not as much as we would like. Okay. They're a lot. It's a lot tougher to do. Mm-hmm. But we have worked with somebody that's a part of search and rescue. They've come in and taught about it. But to do like what we would want, like the full on training,
mm-hmm.
It's just tougher. And so honestly, like I wish we have done more because I think that's something that's incredible. And especially getting the kids to volunteer after high school for that, I think is something that's very important.
That's cool.
So
it's awesome that you're introducing all these other avenues that you could go and get a degree for, or you could not go and do more of the trade side of that, because
right.
I think we're kind of moving out of that generation of like college.
Right. Yeah,
like that's
absolutely.
That's how I grew up. There was no
yep.
other options.
Yep.
Had I known there was lineman school, welding,
yeah.
like all this other stuff, like I think back to it now and like, wow, that would have been cool. Not saying I regret any decision I've made, but like
so,
just knowing about that,
yeah.
it's so awesome because you don't have to go and sit in a classroom.
No, you don't. Well, in fact, like, yeah, it's hard to say this, like, but knowing what I know now and like if it was like here, like, so I'll tell you, even after working for the Forest Service, and I if I would have gotten my permanent, mm-hmm. I would have been a firefighter. Mm-hmm. And even working with Kelly, talking with Kelly, like, I was doing the master's program at the time, and I was talking with her, like, hey, like, at that time, it was very difficult to get a permanent. In 2012, 2013, yeah. It was extremely insane. I was just, it was only Ukiah. Like, I was like, I want to work there. I was competing against firefighters. Yeah, I think that was my fourth, fifth year or whatever, that has been there, you know, 8-9 years. And I would absolutely, like, they are incredible firefighters. Like, mm-hmm. but I'm going to apply, like, all that kind of stuff of, like, if I get this permanent, like, that's what I'm going to do. Now, I'll tell you, like, holy cow, I have students, former students, in their second year just got a permanent. Like,
they're handing them
that's
out.
That's insane.
Yeah, and they're like fours and fives, but still, like, yeah. If you're 19, 20, that's amazing. Oh, yeah.
I would have, there's no way. Like, if I would not have been a teacher if that was, like, if that was available to me. Mm-hmm. I have students in their third, fourth year firefighting making $25,000 more than I make with a master's degree teaching and firefighting. They're working for
that's
the shots.
Good for them.
It is amazing. I think that's awesome. Like, I'm like, that is all. Like, I brought that student in, and he's working for Rogue River Hot Shots, and I'm like, and so he's telling the kids, like, how much he's able to make, like, and they're so trying to tell kids. I will tell you, like, trying to explain to kids, like, some will understand it, but they really don't. Like, they all think right out of high school they're making $125,000. Like,
oh,
like,
it is, oh, you
it
wish.
Is so hard to tell them, like, no.
I'm popping the bubble, yes, right there.
And so, but you can't tell them that. They're all like, yeah, like, no, I'm gonna be able to make this insane amount of money.
You're like,
and
hey, like, do you want to know how much, yeah, I make? Because, yeah, I'll kill you right now.
I will tell you, like, my first year teaching, I was making $35,000 with the master's. You know, and then, yeah, getting 15 extra as a firefighter. But, like, there's kids now, like, straight out of high school, working through. They're just going as much as they can. Like, second year, making almost $100,000. While as a teacher at the master's, my 11th year, I'm making almost 60. Like, still, like, it is low. But, like, you don't teach for the money. Right. But, like, you have no debt. I still have $75,000 worth of student loans. Okay, 75 grand. Well, actually, this is my last month paying loans, and then the 10-year student loan forgiveness for public service. But,
yay.
And that's, so I won't be able to use that anymore because I still tell my kids. But, like, if they have no interest in college, they can have a career very quickly. Like, if they follow my rules of, like,
right,
like, hey, if you get a job with the Forest Service and you have a good attitude, you work hard, and you show up on time,
right, and you're coachable
and you want to learn and you're humble. Like, that's another one too. It's like, that's another, that is one bad part about this that I have seen for, I will absolutely not say any names, and I don't want any of my students, if they hear this, to think that it's them. So if you think it's you, it's not. But I have heard from some of them that, like, they'll come in there, and so I've been trying to change that as well, but they'll come in there like thinking they know everything already, because that they have done 3 years of fire science. They have already done all the burns. They've done line digs. They've done mock fire after mock fire after mock fire. They've been on engines. They could run all the pumps. They know. They've done all the hose lays. They've, like, there's not an aspect that and they've done 3 years as much. And, like, I send them, and they will go and work with the Forest Service, and they'll do job shadows and when they're doing job shadows, they're just rolling hose. Like, I'm literally like, hey, what can my kids do for you?
Yeah.
Job shadowing. Like,
yeah.
And so they're literally doing this grunt work, and I'm like, work them into the ground.
Yes.
Like, show them, make them uncomfortable, make
you're
them
like,
mad.
I've been telling them how hard it is.
Yes.
You need to make it hard.
You need, yeah, to make this hard.
Yeah.
And, like, and some of my kids, they'll get to be able to run dozer, and, like, they're learning all this stuff. And so that is one bad aspect about that, though. And then and if you guys know anybody working with a firefighter that comes in and they think they know everything and they don't want to listen, like, that's tough. Like, that is tough. And, like, and so trying to get them to be more humble, and also you don't know anything. And every year, no matter what, though, I want them still doing fire school. Even if they have their certificates, doing fire school, and pretend like you don't know anything.
Right.
I try to tell them, like, nothing's worse than somebody that thinks they know everything. Like, you're just going to be, even if you already know it, like, learn it again. Right. There might be another way. Like, learn it again. See what they have to say. Like, and be safe, work hard, have a good attitude, show up on time, like, still stick to that. But, like, I have quite a few former students who have permanents now and are doing amazing and are 100 times better firefighter than I've ever been. And they're doing incredible. And like, that is so awesome to me. Like, I am so proud of my kids. Like, I message them a lot and they'll send me a lot of their pictures and like show me what they're doing. And every chance I get to bring them back to talk to the class is like something extremely special for not only me, but the class. They're like, they get to see all the success and like what that can bring.
Totally.
And that's been really cool.
That has to be pretty special for you to, with your background of maybe not, and you spoke about it before, but you know, you're really trying to be that mentor, that coach, that teacher, and that person in your community that you always wish you had.
Yep.
So kudos to you. That's gonna be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Sounds like you're reaching that goal.
Yeah. Hoping to. Yeah. Like. Yeah.
That's awesome. So, in kind of the lead in with us coming up with questions, I reached out to different community members that know you. And they spoke to some of your philanthropy work. So I want, and I know you're a very humble person, so this is not bragging, this is you just telling us what you do.
Yeah.
So what do you do for philanthropy? What is volunteer like, or what does volunteer work look like for you?
I started this mental health class that introduces like everything that childhood trauma and anything like, there are so many kids that are suffering that like don't have their basic needs met. And I've had a lot of people in the community of like, why are you, so like my fire money, 100% of it gets poured into the kids here or family members or whatever. And so like, I make sure like no kid is ever gonna not have shoes. Like I was that kid, like I was wearing the same shoes every single day for every single sport, holes in them. Every single day, I didn't have anybody that was like, oh, they need shoes. Like, that was, like, not on their mind. And so, same thing. I was getting weather cuts. I didn't have a coat for years. Like, that was not, like, it's either buy shoes, get a coat, or have food. And a lot of times, it's none of that. My only food would be getting food from the school. And knowing how much, like, it gets a little dark, but, like, in high school, in junior high and high school, especially after my mom was killed, like, I remember there wasn't, I don't remember a day not wanting to die. Like, I wasn't like full on like, oh, I'm gonna kill myself, but I was always like, at the back of my mind, I was like, man, it would be a lot better if I just wasn't here. And like, what drove me to keep going was to take care and make sure my three sisters made it, my two brothers, right?
Are you the oldest?
I am not. But my older sister though, she was, hopefully she never hears it, but I mean, and she knows, she was kind of a hot mess. And like, she was dating these older guys that were like, just the worst human beings and just using her for the worst things. Like, she's a young girl, 14, 15 years old, and dating a guy that shouldn't have no, like, and like, so the things that I've seen, I have sisters that have been raped. Both my brothers are hooked on drugs. I've had sisters attempted suicide. I have a little brother who's schizophrenic, full on, and I'm now an expert on schizophrenia, bipolar, all of those disease, like, or mental illnesses that oftentimes start with trauma, and then if you mix trauma, if you mix any bit of hereditary, if you have bipolar or schizophrenia in your family, and then you mix trauma along with substance abuse, and they usually go hand in hand. And so what I've done is I started this mental health class, and I teach it hard of like this, it's an eye opener, and I make sure the admin knows of like, it's gonna be passionate. There's gonna be tears. There's gonna be a lot of stuff because I'm gonna be talking about the things that I've seen. I have never, and say same thing with coaching. Like I hit it hard of like, if you smoke pot, if you drink, you're gonna be suspended for three times the length that the school does. Okay, not because I'm trying to be a jerk or anything like that, but. Mm-hmm. That's a coping mechanism, right? It makes them feel good. It makes them feel like right now we're having a bad issue with vaping. Mm-hmm. Right? If you look at why kids vape, and if you talk to a lot of those kids that vape, especially if they're not doing it because like, oh, my group of friends do it, but they're doing it because they're stressed out. Like, it's something that makes them feel good, right? That is directly correlated to there's some sort of trauma that is hitting them hard, and they're most likely they're the ones that are having those thoughts of suicide. Like, 2 years ago, I had five kids just in the spring attempt suicide. They're in the hospital for it. One got sent away for it, right? Mm-hmm. And so seeing that, and those are the kids that I work with. Those are the kids in my health class. Those were my siblings. Those were me. Like and so for them to hear from me of like, I know exactly what you're thinking. Like, every single day, you feel like the world would be better off if you were not here. And a lot of times I remember thinking like, I hope there's no God. Cause like, I hope, like, if I do end it, like, I just want to be, and that's why I said firefighting saved my life. Like, it absolutely did. I struggled mightily with my mental health. It took it, like, I was, and I was faking it, right? I was like doing everything I could, but I was so sad and like, so like, the only thing I can do to make me feel anything of like wanting to live was work myself into the ground. That was what I was proud of. Like, any job that I can do, I'd work as hard as I could. That helped me sleep. Like, coming from trauma and turmoil, sleeping like didn't happen. When you're the fight or flight is always happening in your brain. Like, that's some of our students, like a ton of our students actually, and that's like in every single school. What I learned too is that something, and I try to teach that to my kids, is a couple of the things that helped me the most. Because you'll find like there's not a lot of people when you're going through that are gonna help you. There's not, like, everybody has their own thing, and so like you're gonna have to, in a lot of ways. Like, I try to be the adult. Like they say, like if you're going through that and you're high on those ACEs and you're feeling like giving up, if you have one single adult that will care for you and know, and you can count on that adult. Like, if you're hungry, if you need shoes, like if you need anything at all, if you have one person that you can count on, you can make it, right? Mm-hmm. It's the same thing, like kids that be like, oh, I'm so alone, I have no friends. As long as you have one single friend, you're not alone. Like, mm-hmm. you just, and that's like being lonely and any of that kind of stuff can be some of the most painful, but you just need one. Okay, so I'm trying to be that one and trying to hit as much as I can. And so like the philanthropy stuff came from teaching my kids two major things that can help your mental health the most, like especially if it's just you. It's one is getting as much exercise as you can. Like, exercise is massive. And number two is helping other people. Like, helping other people, it can be some of the most selfish things you can possibly do, because it helps you just as much or more than it helps them. Like, I'm very preachy when it comes to like being kind and like don't bully. Like, everything that you say to people like matters. Like, you don't ever know what somebody else is going through. And so doing what you can to speak positive about other people and not be the one that is stirring anything. And like, and if you guys remember back to high school, junior high school, like, I will tell you.
Oh, we just had the same initial reaction.
So, but I tell my kids this. I am 36 years old. I'm beat up and I'm going through some health issues right now. And where, like, last spring I thought I was gonna die. Like, I spent a while, like, I was terrified, thinking I had an MRI and they found some stuff in my brain, and like I was going through just an insane amount of pain, like all that kind of stuff. And it was terrifying. But I will tell my students, like, there is nothing, I would not trade anything to go back and relive junior high and high school. Like, and so like the stuff that you guys are going through is extremely difficult every single day. And if you combine that with issues at your house, right? You're going through trauma and you're not safe at home. You might get beat or picked on, any of that kind of stuff. You don't have food, you don't have any of that stuff. And then you come to school and then kids are making, like, I remember when we lived in a motel, we lived in a van, we lived like anywhere we can live. Like, I didn't know it was considered homeless at the time. We lived in a campground. That's where my mom was killed. Like, she literally just lived in a campground for forever, for years, right? And so going to school after that and being the smelly kid, not understanding that, so I'm sitting in class and nobody wants to sit by me, right? I'm in grade school, nobody wants to be, and they all pew like that, and not understanding that, but just being very hurt of like, nobody likes me, I have no friends, like any of that kind of stuff. And it took a long time to kind of like understand that, like, oh, I need a shower, I need to like have, but I'm wearing the exact same clothes, right, every single day. And we'll have students like that. And so what I want to do, and again, a short story long, but like, I want to take away all of that from any of the students. If I recognize that, I'm going to make the teachers aware, and I'm going to make darn sure that none of our kids are getting picked on. If I know that a student is getting bullied, I'm going to address it. And luckily, as a basketball coach, as a fire science teacher, I'm in a position to where those kind of kids, like, they're going to listen to me. And I turn from nice to mean, like, bad. Like, it's, that is, I will not, I don't allow, like, homophobia, sexism, like racism, any of that kind of stuff. Like none of that language, like anything that just that will destroy a kid for being who they are, like does not happen. Like I'm not going to allow it. And I've made it very clear, like I'll full on like just the N-word too. Like I've had students that will just full on just call that. And we have the most precious kids in this school. And if they, I mean, I go from a 0 to 1,000 if I hear any of that kind of stuff, the R word, like anything that just destroys a kid. Like I've been in a grocery store when somebody will call a little kid with Down syndrome the R word, right? And that hurts that family, right? Mm-hmm. Those words will destroy. It does the same thing to all of our students. And so I try to make a huge deal. And I tell the kids too, like, I know where you learn that. They learn it from home. Okay, it's they learn the racism, sexism, like bigotry, all that kind of stuff. They learn it from home. It's not you're not born with that. It's learned behavior, and you can relearn that behavior. And if you go home and you tell them that Mr. Fulfer said that it is not okay for me to be saying the and calling kids the N-word, and you could tell your parents that, they have an issue, they can come up and talk with me. I will. The school can fire me. I don't care. That is a cross I'll die on. I don't care. Like, I am not going to be a teacher and allow hateful words and just destroying kids. And so I make a big push. I teach it in every single class I ever teach. I make it very clear. I preach for like the first week of every class. Doesn't matter if it's PE, doesn't matter if it's history. I teach the same things of your words can destroy. So we're going to do everything we can to always be kind. We are going to do random acts of kindness. We're going to make it habit. And I tell them, even if that's all you learn to be a bully and you learn to be a hateful person, you're going to fake it for me. And guess what? The more you fake it, the more it becomes habit, and the more you get used to it. And you'll find that your life becomes a lot more positive being a positive person and helping others instead of destroying. Okay, and so I've seen huge, massive turns from students that I get in seventh grade, or they'll be new and they'll come in and they're not used to our system. They'll come in as a sophomore and they're used to, and a lot of times too, those the biggest bullies are the ones that have been picked on the most.
Right.
If you ever ask one of the biggest bullies, like if every kid is like, that kid is the bully, I'm getting bullied by that kid. If you sit down that student and you ask them, why are you doing this? They're like, what? I'm being bullied. I've been bullied my whole life. 100%. I've never seen it not happen. Okay. They're always the one that thinks that they have been bullied as well. Even like the stud athlete, any of that kind of stuff that you're like, I've been picked on. People are jealous of me. Like people are jealous that my family is wealthy and all this other stuff. And if you tell them like what I have seen from your behavior is that you're a bully. Like you, I will call them out. I've seen them change though. I've never not yet seen kids not be able to change and actually be positive. And then they always find, especially if they take my mental health class for a year, because we do everything we can. We do so much. We work with our grade school. We do documentaries. We do papers. We read books together. Like we do all the stuff of like putting ourselves in other people's shoes. And so that's, again, short story long. That's where a lot of this volunteer stuff started. I had my class a few years ago, do a lot of research on like the best charities. Like, what do you find like, cause like those large charities that just take a ton of money and then like 95% of the money donated doesn't actually go to doing any help. And so what we did was a bunch of research on the small charities that do the most amount of good and what can we do to support them. And so my first one was working with one in Tanzania. I worked with an orphanage and then I worked with, so the Cheti orphanage, it had like 8 schools, had a special needs school, and so I ended up just teaching there, and then I worked with a charity called Hope and Soul. So after school, we would do family outreach, and so I ended up doing a GoFundMe, getting this community to donate just an insane amount. $5 can buy an entire family groceries, enough food for a week. $5. Like it blew my mind. Wow. And so we ended up doing this massive family outreach of like, cause like I would be teaching and then all of a sudden I'd have 3 students not there. And I'd ask the administration, like, where is this student? Like this is like my favorite kid. Like, where is it? Well, they're literally begging for food. Their family is starving. They can't go to school anymore. And I was like, that is awful. And so we did everything we could to provide the food for the families, provide all the necessities, shoes, all that kind of stuff. And so, and we still, my health class still works. And actually I started a kindness club. that does a lot of fundraisers for these charities. And so I ended up branching out, trying to find more charities. And so making sure, and so I end up traveling to these places. I try to figure out what they do. And then I use everything I can to teach about it and then to spread the word about it and do what we can to make money and donate locally. And so I've been to Turkey and Israel last year, and then went to Mexico in November, going to Egypt in the fall. I'm actually going to India next week and working for two charities, and then come back, and then my mental health class, start fundraisers, and then like a lot of the community service that Fire Science will do, any, like if people do want to donate, mm-hmm. it's going to most of the time go to those charities. And so,
wow.
Yeah. But yeah, trying to set the example. My goal is to build a small army of a lot of kids, students that want to help others and kind of get addicted to that as well, mm-hmm. and getting into charity work. Like what I tell my kids is like, if every single person or even a little bit like decide that they're gonna help somebody else, that becomes infectious, right? The more people that wanna help others and set that example, other people wanna do that, especially if it's people that other people look up to. And so the more you can do for others and kind of set that example, the more other people want to as well. And like one of the most selfish things you can do is help others. And so mm-hmm. it's a really cool double-edged sword, or catch 22.
Yeah.
Jordan, 23. Well, it's funny, yeah, because there's the old basketball cards of catch 23 and they changed it. So I always mm-hmm. think of that one. But anyways, yeah, so you go, you can travel, which is very healthy. You get to see the world, learn history, the culture, all that kind of stuff, especially traveling those kind of places. Then you come back, you have a greater appreciation for what you have.
Certainly.
Like last year, I worked with Syrian and Ukrainian refugees, and they are starving and all that stuff, but they're still so appreciative and still so happy just to still be alive. And then you come back home and like the small things that kind of just destroy you, and like, oh, like that, oh, that's awful, blah, blah, blah. Like you get this new appreciation of like the small things that are going well, mm-hmm. of like that can kind of pick you up. And so the more, so it's become addicting to me. And that's like anytime I can fight fires, like all of that money goes into that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, we don't have much money for anything else. I feel bad for my wife. But,
yeah. Seems like you've taken the kindness club kind of worldwide.
Trying to, yeah. Yeah, it's starting out and we're trying to grow it. And but the kids that are in it have done just an amazing amount of work, and it's been really cool. So
that's awesome.
One of the most rewarding things that I've done as a teacher.
Yeah, so. It seems like you've been able to benefit from that by continuously learning and being the person that you've always wanted in your life.
Yes.
And that you're growing into these people.
Trying to be.
Super cool.
All right, well, thank you, Olin. And you have anything else?
No, I think I'm good. Thank you. This has been awesome. So thank you for sharing your story, and these kids are in this community. He's lucky to have you.
Very lucky.
So thanks for letting us.
Thank you very much. And so when does the podcast actually start? Like when do we record?
You're funny.
Just kidding. Yeah. Wait.
Yeah.
Hey guys, something a little different this week. We are linking all of the charities that Olin is involved with. And if you feel so obliged, you can look at those links in the show notes and donate to those charities. Just as well, like, subscribe, promote the podcast in any way you know how. We would really appreciate that. We have an Instagram page, a Facebook page. If you have a story that you want to share with us or some comments, shoot us an email at decadesondirtroads@gmail.com, and get outside this week.